it's so great to have you back with us for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Harry S. Dent Jr., best-selling author and market strategist. Welcome back, Harry S. Dent Jr.
Nice to be back, Chris.
Investor mentality has changed in just the past few years. A much shorter time frame, and I think this is essential when you start to try to explain your concepts on investing to others. Do you see that the typical investor, their horizon has changed, and how has this impacted your message today?
Well, you know, it has, because the market's been so roller coaster since the tech bubble peaked in early 2000. You know, we've seen crash, and then we've seen bubble again, and then crash, and then now the governments are like pumping everything up, and it's kind of a confusing time, because by our indicators long term, and we said this a long time ago, the demographic surge that was causing this boom with the baby boomers, that was over in late 2007. Ever since then, and the Great Recession, it's been all about governments pumping back up the economy, governments keeping the bubble going. And you know, and at first the gold markets expected, well, gosh, all this money printing is going to create inflation. But we've also been saying for many years is that the trend for the next decade is going to be mostly deflationary, because there's going to be more baby boomers retiring than echo boomers entering the workforce. It is a different time. Something has changed. Governments are not accepting this change. And so to me, it's just confusing investors. Investors don't know what to think when things bubble up and crash again, or when they see the only reason we seem to be making progress is when governments just print a bunch of money. That's not real, and most people know that somewhere down there. So I think it's a very confusing time, and yeah, it's made investors more short-term oriented, and that's not all a bad thing, because I think the markets clearly have more downside than upside over the next several years, so it's better to be cautious.
Speaking of deflation, we saw West Texas Intermediate crude implode over the past few weeks. Clearly, there's a dollar component at play here. Much of the action is a direct result of ECB and the Bank of Japan, as well as the PBOC, colluding to essentially crush their currencies in order to have a Bernanke effect of their own. So clearly there's quantitative easing on both sides that has helped. Did you really expect such an eruption? Do you concur that a big component here is the central banks crushing their currencies to support their economies?
Well, you know, Chris, the bigger picture is that the U.S. dollar devalued from 1985 to early 2008, 58% during the boom. We flooded the world with dollars. Trade deficits, foreign exchange reserves out there to other countries. We ran up more debt than anybody else. And so when we started to hit this change in the economy, we got more deflation from, you know, our debt deleveraging. Now, that's the broader view. We're looking for the dollar to go up for years. But yes, in recent times, what's happened is we also look at demographic trends, and Europe's demographics are aging faster than the U.S. Japan started aging back in the 90s, and we predicted that downturn because of their demographics. And so since their economies are weaker, they are having to print more money, quantitative easing, to keep their economies from falling into deflation or falling into recession or depression than we are. We're printing money up until recently, but they're printing more. And in Japan, really went off the charts, printing money starting in early 2013, and now we've just seen, just as the U.S. tapered off, we've seen the ECB step in, and their economy is on the verge of recession. Italy is in recession. Germany is right on the cusp of recession. So is France. And the only countries doing half good over there are countries like Greece that have gotten so many bailouts, they've gotten relief. So it's a long-term and a short-term picture. Short-term, clearly, the biggest reason for the change in the last several months is, yes, we're being outprinted by our major trading partners.
And there's been some interesting developments, I think you'd agree, in the last week or so. In particular, unlike the Bundesbank, the Netherlands had very little difficulty receiving most, if not all, of their gold reserves from the New York Fed. And this is, I think, quite interesting, not only from a geopolitical standpoint, but also for our community in general. They had something like 150 tons of gold repatriated, whereas the Bundesbank has only had the pleasure of 5 tons.
I'm not in the camp that says we're going to have to return to a gold standard. We need a standard, but there is not enough gold to really back currencies in this age where information technologies are growing much faster than natural resources. So I mean, that's one thing. But on the other hand, I've just been watching gold. We've been predicting for the last couple of years that gold would fall and would fall because it's not. We're in a deflationary era, not an inflationary era, despite all the money printing. But despite saying that, to me, recently it's looked like gold has been trying to find a near-term bottom, that they broke through some key support around 1180. You would have thought gold would have fallen apart. It looks like, to me, it's trying to put in a bottom here. It's kind of zigging, zagging up and down. And I think the selling is probably over for now in gold. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see gold bounce to somewhere between 1300 and 1400. But I still see the trend more down than up over the next couple of years, because I see commodities in general. We've been saying, along with Louis Mavalier and a bunch of people, that you've got this broad trend that nobody's noticing, that the global economy is slowing down, not just Europe, but the global economy in China and emerging countries. And it's largely because commodities keep weakening, partly because of a rising dollar, but partly because of slowing. And when those commodity exports weaken for these emerging markets, they slow down. And when they slow down, China slows down because they're exporting to everybody, including emerging markets. So we have this kind of vicious cycle of commodities falling, emerging markets slowing. And emerging markets have all the demographic strength. All of the developed countries have slow demographics, including the U.S. We're just not as bad as Europe or Japan. So this whole thing is kind of like a pernicious thing that we see continuing over the next several years, that world's going to slow, commodities are going to fall, and that's going to actually hurt emerging markets more than it hurts developed in some ways. And so I'm looking for a good bounce in gold, maybe for several months, but I still think gold is more headed down. And, you know, we've been saying for years, dollar headed up, gold and commodities heading down. That's been one of our key trends.
It's an interesting dichotomy. On the one hand, we have what should be the perfect recipe for solid precious metals. I mean, a global banker's throwing money from helicopters and launching it actually up into the air in ICBM missiles. But on the other hand, the trend is lower, and you've outlined many solid reasons why. I would recommend that people use weakness as an opportunity to build up a portfolio of precious metals reserves, because the end game here can't be very positive for currencies. I mean, that might be 5-10 years down the road, but ultimately, wouldn't you say there's a day of reckoning?
Well, the end game's not really good for anything, Chris. That's our view, that people don't understand that once in a lifetime, you get what we call a winter season. You have a big bubble boom. Everything bubbled up, including gold and commodities in recent years, and stocks and real estate and everything around. And when these bubbles finally burst, they're driven by debt, driven by speculation, strong trends and stuff. Everything goes down. I mean, currencies get hit. A lot of currencies get hit. Commodities get hit. Real estate gets hit. Stocks get hit. We had a similar thing happen in the 1930s. And so to me, it's not a good end game for anything. And money printing normally would be positive gold, no question about it. But in this case, governments are feverishly printing money to replace the demographic growth that's disappearing and debt that's being deleveraged slowly. It would be deleveraging much faster. So we've got a broader processing going here that is working towards deflation, and we would have much greater deflation if it weren't for so much money printing. So central banks, we're fighting the inevitable, and it's not a good outcome for anything. I think we're going to have a much deeper, broad-based economic collapse in the next 2 to 5 years that most people don't expect. Most people say, oh, we've seen the worst of it, and governments won't let that happen again. Governments are creating an even bigger bubble than before, and even greater debt and greater imbalances in our economy, and our economy is going to have to balance this back out. And in that process, I think gold will go down farther than one of these days when it's $250 to $400 an ounce. I'm going to be in there buying with both fists, because longer term, you're going to have an inflation trend again, and you're going to have emerging markets driving our economy more than developed. And they are huge commodity and gold consumer.
With regard to the precious metals, yes, on a nominal basis, we've seen quite an interesting rally 2002 to 2012. But on a real basis, gold is virtually where it was in 1980, you know, over 30 years ago. You could find ample evidence to show that the yellow metal holds up quite well during deflationary implosions and actually can even move sharply higher. There could be the beginning of a hyperinflation, not a deflation. And if you look at the Weimar example in Zimbabwe and several others, Venezuela, Argentina, over the past, let's say, 100 years, you see the stock markets take off with a vengeance, and they never abate. They continue ad infinitum higher, taking everything else up with them.
Well, again, we look at broader trends, Chris, and the Weimar Republic, that whole blowout came at the end of, just after World War One, when they'd lost the war, Germany, and they were incredibly in debt and bankrupt, and then the winning countries, the Allies, put reparations on them. They had to print money to get out of there, but that was at the tail end of an inflationary era that actually peaked about 1920 for most countries and 23 for Germany. The 30s was a deflationary era. This is a deflationary era. We have never seen governments so concertedly print money and continue to print money year after year after year after year and still have low inflation or mild deflation. We're in a deflationary era. I think somewhere down the road you might could get hyperinflation, but not in this circumstance. The world's everything, the aging of developed countries is deflationary. Commodity prices falling is deflationary. High debt deleveraging, bubbles bursting, all of this is deflationary. It destroys money. And so, again, I just say governments are, it's just the fact that they're printing so much and we're having so little inflation, and the gold is not bouncing stronger, shows you that there's a deeper fundamental trend, and it's all about deflation. And when this thing finally cracks and governments basically lose this battle for keeping the bubbles going, and the bubbles burst anyway, and I think China's the biggest bubble that could start something, a snowball running downhill that no central bank could stop. When that happens, you're just going to have worse deflation to make up for all the reflation and denial. This is just denial to say, oh, we had the greatest debt bubble in history. We encouraged the greatest speculation in history, stocks, real estate, commodities, everything. And we just won't let the bubble fall because it would hurt too much.
We have very similar viewpoints, but we're coming to conclusions from very different angles. I mean, you have over $250 billion in notional derivatives floating around the world, holding up this edifice that appears to be solid and stable. To me, it's built on a very shaky foundation that ultimately ends poorly. A situation that looks like deflation, but from my perspective, it's just classic disinflation. An inevitably tsunami of inflation that strikes like a thief in the night.
And then as they did, that the commodities and the precious metals market would be an incredible long-term buy.
I mean, of course, you know, I'm biased at any level. If we look at it on any context, just the Dow to gold ratio or any ratio you want to use, especially in real terms, no portfolio, I think, could suffer from having a good solid 10, 15, 20% foundation in the precious metals. Let's move on now to the retail sales number. We're seeing Walmart, which was leading the Dow higher, just an explosive move. The number is just not so solid. Is that an indication of slow growth to you? Or is this just an anomaly?
Well, you know, one of the things demographics tells us a lot of things. It tells us car sales are going to start to fall over the next couple of years. Germany's going to underperform in Europe, even though they appear to be the strongest country, just because of the different demographic cycles they're in. Well, what we've had here in the U.S. is we've had the top 10 to 20% doing better than ever, especially with bubbling markets, and they own all these financial securities. And they have lower unemployment, all these things. They're benefiting from all this stimulus. The person isn't much better off, if any, than they were at the tech peak in 2000 or when the Great Recession started in 2008. So I think what's happening is when you look at internet sales and high-end sales, they're doing well. But the everyday person, Target and Walmart, really haven't been doing that well for a long time. But we see that the affluent people, they're the last to peak in their spending because their kids go to school longer, they go to school longer, their whole life cycle peaks later. They're set to peak right here in late 2014, and they're going to go off a cliff like between 2007 and 8. So I think even this affluent strength is going to start to dissipate in the next year or two, and so are car sales, especially upper-end car sales. And Germany is going to keep surprising the downside of the next few years. So the demographics only work against central banks here. And I think they're going to get caught with their shorts down here. And I think they're going to have these bubbles, the economy turn against them despite unprecedented stimulus. And then we're going to see what happens, how much deflation versus this or that. But I agree with you one thing. This cannot end well. And if it does, if we go to the next 5 years and don't see a major financial crisis, I am going to quit my profession.
Please don't do that. With regard to affluent investors, and as a group, I agree with you, they've certainly benefited the most here. But I'd really like to know, without any fear-mongering here, are we looking at something similar to early 1930s? Is this going to be a Great Recession with a vengeance? Part two, could we see something similar, as I said, to the early 1930s? What do you see on the horizon?
It's going to be better if we see something like the 1930s, because it'll take the bubbles and the debt out of our economy quickly, and that's what happened there. And we came screaming out of that. The other scenario is what we've seen in Japan. Japan has continued to see their real estate and their stock markets go to lower lows and slowly deleverage, but they never had a banking crisis. They never wrote off debt. And so their debt is higher than ever. You can't keep aging and going in the future with higher and higher debt and have it end well. So Japan's had this, we're just going to keep stimulating and worry about it later. I call it a coma economy. That is the worst scenario to me, because you never come out of that coma. Japan has never come out of that coma 23, 24 years after their bubble started to burst. And we came out of that coma, started coming out of that coma 3 years after our bubbles burst in the early 30s, because we let the system detox, clean itself of debt and speculation very rapidly. Banks failed very rapidly. Businesses failed. Commodity prices came down. Bubbles burst. You know, all this sort of stuff. It was painful, and everybody's trying to prevent that pain, but I see it ending more like the 30s. But it's a question of central banks have to lose control of the economy, because thus far, every time bubbles burst, they just ramp them right back up again. They just throw more money in, and the speculators go for it. And I tell you right now, investors are really cocky. Investors, you can tell by their behavior, even when we have their corrections, they may not buy, but they don't sell. Nobody thinks the Fed will let this stock market go down more than 10 or 20 cents. I think the richest people in this country are going to be the ones that get hit the hardest when this financial bubble finally blows. Not much money in stocks. It's the top 1 to 10% that own all these financial bubbles.
No, it's exactly right. The middle class is just not participating in this rally. And interesting to me, the retail side of this rally is very low. I mean, not like we saw in, as we mentioned, 2000, earlier equities bubble. Now, maybe that will change. Maybe we will see the retail investor come back in. And that, of course, would be a great sign of a top. But I think you're right. Ultimately, there has to be a big correction here at some point. But I don't see that occurring in the foreseeable future. I think this is going to continue to pull more and more funds and capital around the world, because most of the banks have taken the central bank money. They have very few places to park that cash that's productive. You're earning negative rates in the ECB right now, and it looks like it's only going to get worse there. Where can you put those funds and feel confident, think a lot of it's being directed into stocks?
The stocks look the best, especially U.S. large cap stocks. That's the best play right now. But if that's where everybody's running, that's where the next crash is going to come. It's guaranteed. They ran into tech stocks. When that failed, they ran into real estate and flipping houses. When that failed, they ran into gold and commodities. And that failed. I mean, why, you know, you just keep jumping lily pads to new bubbles. Every bubble's going to burst until the whole thing bursts. There is a point where there are no more bubbles, and finally, the central banks can't pump it up anymore. Finally, investors lose confidence. Finally, the bubbles burst despite stimulus, because it takes more and more to have less and less of.
Can you give us a precedent in the last century, or you can go back as far as you like, as ancient Greece or Rome, where this scenario you outlined, and I'd like to be able to juxtapose that with what we're seeing currently?
Now, you know, Chris, there's really not, because we've never... We've lowered interest rates to cushion downturns. We've never just printed trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, except in war periods like World War II, to keep bond rates down. I tell you, the closest precedent I would see in the early 1700s, when the stock market was young, France and England had spent tons of money in war. They were huge in debt. And what both governments tried to do was sell land they had in America or sell shares they had in trading companies that they'd helped funded to the public. And they financed this with low-cost loans, and they basically created a bubble. And it was the South Seas bubble and the Mississippi land bubble in France, South Seas in England. Both these bubbles burst in 1720. And, I mean, they didn't just burst a little. They were down 99%. And so that thing, that literally caused a 67-year bear market in stocks in Europe. I mean, that was the bubble of bubbles. And governments helped create it. So that was what I call an artificial bubble. You know, the growth trends had already peaked. But since governments were desperate from racking up such huge war debts from decades and decades of war between England and France, they came up with this central bank-like scheme to basically create money out of nothing, and it blew up on them. It took 70 years to get back.
If everything does implode, all these markets, equities, real estate, commodities, virtually everything implodes, and we're all looking around, there's nothing but smoke, okay? There's not even fire. It's just all over. The whole house of cards implodes.
Farmland's in a bubble. Farmland's gone up 7-8 times in the last decade or two. It's as big a bubble as the NASDAQ was. So everything's bubbled. See, to me, I'd rather be in cash and save stuff, wait for these bubbles to burst, and then you're selective. Then you say, you know what I really want to buy when I think everything's, I want to buy commodities and I want to buy emerging countries, because emerging countries are going to have the demographic trends behind them after this global crash, and commodities are going to be driven by those very emerging countries. We might see the biggest commodity boom in history, but it may be 6-7 years before they bottom out with all this deflationary trend. But at the bottom, you could buy anything and do well. But I say commodities and emerging markets will be the best things to buy if we just have an across-the-board rally.
Outline, though, why you see emerging economies, why you see peripheral nations like the BRICS, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, South Africa, China. Why would these countries be the go-to investments of the post-crash world?
Well, because they have all the young people. We're aging. We've already become urban. We've already become middle class and upper class. They're still in the early stages of becoming middle class in most of these countries. Most of these countries are still moving people from rural to urban areas. India is only 33% urban. Now, China's like 58%. So they're farther along the line. They've overbuilt. I'm less bullish on China. But if we saw an all-out rout, India would be one of the first places I'd buy. And guess who are the big consumers of gold in the world? Indian.
Right, and not to mention they just dropped that 80-20 rule. So, of course, now banking industries and financial institutions can import as much as they like without having to export 20% in the form of jewelry. So this, of course, is a big demand component on the horizon. Very well said. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time today, but it's always a pleasure having you on the show. We'll look forward to having you back on GoldSeek.com Radio.
Okay, thanks, Chris.